passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Today is March 4th. We just finished the third weekend of college baseball action. Fun weekend, entertaining weekend around the country. We've got a lot to talk about. And here joining me today on the podcast are Dave Serrano and Joe Healy. Welcome in, guys.
Thanks for having me back, Teddy.
Yeah, hey, Teddy. Excited to talk about it.
Yeah, so week three is, I guess, traditionally a big weekend around the country. We're a couple weeks in, so teams, I think, feel a little more confident in testing themselves. And we're still a week or two away from conference play, so everyone can kind of load up, and as a result there are some big tournaments this weekend every year, as well as some big series, and all of that led to some significant shakeups for the first time in the Baseball America Top 25 this year. Vanderbilt remains number one in the Top 25, and after that the rankings start to look a little bit differently. You had Texas sweeping LSU this weekend, and as a result LSU has fallen out of the number two spot that they'd been in since the preseason. UCLA moves up to number two, North Carolina to three. Stanford jumps into the top five for the first time at number four. Florida remains at five, followed by Florida State. And then we have Oregon State, Mississippi State, Texas into the top 10 for the first time, and LSU rounding out the top 10. We had two new teams enter the top 25. We had South Carolina come in. They're at number 20, following a series win against their arch rival Clemson. And also joining the ranking is North Carolina State. They're in at number 23. They are undefeated and just finished off a sweep of Minnesota. So the rankings look a little bit differently this week. I would encourage you all to check them out in more depth at baseballamerica.com. Every week Joe does a good job of wrapping up what each team has done over the course of the weekend, or over the course of the previous week. And so there's a lot of good info over in the top 25 at baseballamerica.com beyond just the basic rankings there. So make sure to check those out, and we'll continue to see how this progresses throughout the season. But this is going to be, I feel like, one of the bigger changes in terms of just week to week in the rankings of the year, certainly the biggest so far. So we have a lot to talk about as a result. Like I mentioned, there were some big series, some big tournaments. But let's start with Texas sweeping LSU. The Longhorns came into the weekend number 19. There were some questions about the Longhorns at the start of the season, just in terms of they lost an awful lot from last year's Omaha club. Everyone knows that Cody Clemens is gone into pro ball, who was a third-round pick last year, the All-American second baseman, and Golden Spikes finalist, was a huge part of Texas's success last season. But they also lost some significant pieces on their pitching staff. Two members of the rotation are gone, two of their key bullpen arms, their closer, and really their bullpen ace, and Parker Joe Robinson, and Andy McGuire. Those two guys are gone. And as a result, Texas was, there are some questions. And then shortstop David Hamilton was injured in January. He ruptured his Achilles tendon, and he's out for the year now. So Texas started the season well, despite, a largely new look roster. But their biggest test that was by far this weekend against LSU, the Tigers coming into Dish Falk Field at 8-0, riding really high. And they hadn't really been tested to before this weekend, and they got a big test, and Texas passed the test with flying colors. They won 8-1 on Friday night. Bryce Elder was outstanding again for the Horns. They rolled through on Saturday, beat up Landon Marceau pretty good. And then on Sunday, they came back, scored four runs in the final two innings to walk off with a 7-6 victory. And right now, Texas, with their moving up to 9, becomes the highest-ranked Big 12 team in the top 25. And at this point, you know, they look like they're very much going to contend in the Big 12, to which they won last year. Texas Tech has been a little shaky the last couple weekends. They went 0-2 this weekend. We'll get to them in a second. But, Joe, what has worked for Texas so far this season?
Well, you mentioned his name. I mean, a big part of it's been the success of Bryce Elder, because if you'd gone into the season and told me that 3 weeks of the season Blair Henley was going to have a 6.75 ERA, you know, I would have been a little bit worried about what we'd see from Texas, because he was kind of the one guy you thought you knew what you'd be getting from him, and that still very well could be the case. Small size that we're still working with now, but he has not been. Bryce Elder's really stepped into that. Considering the opponent, probably his best outing, 6 2/3 innings, 4 hits and 1 run, which was unearned against an LSU offense that we know is really, really good. Hobbs did a nice job. The opportunities he's gotten, he started in the Sunday game against LSU, and they've just got a handful of guys in the bullpen who seem to have taken steps forward. Cameron Fields, perhaps chief among them, guy with really good stuff who showed some good things last year but also had some struggles, and he's been really good. Owen Meany, a new face out there in the bullpen's done a nice job. Cole Quintanilla, a guy who maybe got, you know, bumped potentially from the rotation by the presence of a guy like Bryce Elder being in the rotation. He's taken to serving in a bullpen role, 11 2/3 innings already for him out of the bullpen, and he's been just about untouchable. So the pitching has really been there, which was kind of the question mark we had about them. And it just kind of goes to show that, you know, this is a program that continues to be able to develop pitching like that. Offensively, I think it's good news that, well, not good news. You would always choose to have your best guys hitting well, but Zach Zuby is still kind of getting going a little bit. And the offense hasn't just been Zach Zuby and a bunch of guys. Austin Todd's off to a nice start. Ryan Reynolds is off to a nice start. And those are two guys I think that we highlighted as keys for this offense moving into the season, and they've lived up to that. Now, the thing I will say is they have missed David Hamilton a little bit, because the guys who are filling in there in the middle infield, Bryce Regan, Mason Hibbler, Lance Ford, those guys are all off to kind of tough starts offensively. And so that certainly is something to watch moving forward. David Hamilton certainly was more of a game changer defensively than he was offensively, but he also turned into a nice offensive player. And so it kind of remains to be seen, you know, what they get from those guys moving forward when they get into Big 12 play and they are being tested week after week after week against better and better pitching staff. So that's certainly something to watch moving forward. But this is an athletic offense. It's getting a lot of stuff from a lot of different guys. And then the pitching has just really taken a step forward. You've got a lot of new faces who are doing a lot of nice things. And then, you know, Bryce Elder, I think, if you were to make me give you like a one-word answer or a two-word answer, I suppose that would be my answer as to why they are where they are. Is that he's a guy who wasn't necessarily in the plans for the rotation as recently as the end of the fall. But in the spring, just really blew the coaching staff away, and they gave him a shot, and he's really taken it and run with it.
Yeah, I think that you mentioned Austin Todd there, and he was banged up a lot of last year, and obviously they didn't hurt Texas from going where they wanted to be, but I think that at times last year the offense felt like Cody Clemens and some other guys, and part of the reason it felt like that, I think, is because Austin Todd was limited by injuries to 73 at-bats last season. And he's healthy now and back hitting in the middle of the order, and that's been huge for them. And you mentioned Ryan Reynolds getting going, and you know they're doing it really, I guess, collectively right now offensively. They haven't found, you know, anyone that's really just head and shoulders above the rest as good as Austin Todd and Ryan Reynolds have been. And I think that is encouraging for Texas, because you know, they're not going to find another Cody Clemens on that roster, I don't think. So, you know, they're going to need to do it a little more as a team this year. And then the other thing I would say is that, you know, they're missing David Hamilton defensively right now. But I do think that the defenders that they have in the infield are solid. When I talked with David Pierce yesterday, he said they still have work to do defensively. But I think that they'll get it done. I think that Bryce Reagan and Mason Hibler in the middle of the infield can be a solid duo. You know, right now, they're, Pierce said they're making all the routine plays. Now he wants them to start making, you know, some of the harder plays. And if they are able to make that jump, that would be pretty significant for the Longhorns. On the flip side, LSU reeling a little bit after this loss. Their pitching staff kind of got beat up pretty good. Zach Hess got beat up on Friday night. Landon Marceau got beat up on Saturday. And then Todd Peterson at the back end of the bullpen wore it on Sunday. They hit or miss on the offense this weekend for LSU. And, you know, they now have a week to get ready for SEC play, try and regroup. Dave, what does LSU have to do? How do you get a team back on track, you know, over the next week? What's Paul Maneri got to do?
Well, I'll use your words. The flip side is exactly right off of what Joe just explained about Texas. It's the exact opposite. LSU is struggling on the mound, and that's where it starts with them. And really surprising. I have a lot of respect for Alan Dunn and his development of pitching staffs, and I just think they're struggling with their staff right now, and they've got to get some answers in a hurry. Over the course of the weekend, and this is doomed for an 0-3, who no matter who you're playing a lot of the times, they walked 22 guys this weekend from the mound. And it's kind of been something for LSU through the course of the early part of the season, but they haven't really been tested with their schedule yet. In 96 innings, they've walked 59 guys. So they're given a ton of opportunities for other teams. And when you play good teams, they're going to take advantage of it. And obviously Texas did. In game three, they had a 5-3 lead. They had an opportunity to bust the game open with bases loaded and Antoine Duplantis and Daniel Cabrera. They didn't come through, and then it allows the doors to be open for Texas. They had many opportunities that they let squander. They left 22 guys on bases over the course of the weekend. Those two things I've talked about, the free passes and the leaving opportunities on the bases, that is a recipe for the lack of success that they had this weekend. They've got to get back to ABC baseball, and that's throwing strikes, playing defense, and putting the ball in play when you have runners in scoring position. I could only compare this to, they can go one of two ways. They could use this as a springboard to the rest of the season. They've gotten tested. Now they know exactly what they need to work on. In 2001, we took a Cal State Fullerton team into Miami and swept Miami for the first time in their program history on their home field. Well, if you remember, Teddy, and I'm sure you do, you and Joe remember this, 2001, who was the national champion? It was the Miami Hurricanes. So LSU can springboard this tough series of getting swept on the road and use it and get better from that and as they prepare to start SEC play in 2 weeks. But they've got some things to fix, and most of the part, it's on the pitching staff, which has usually been their bread and butter of their program.
Yeah, and we thought that was going to be a strength of this team, that, you know, they would have a lot of pieces on the mound. And, you know, you had Hess coming back on Friday nights, and, you know, he'd been inconsistent last year, but maybe a year later he would be able to be a little more consistent. And to this point, we haven't really seen that. And Marceau, Dave, you and I both picked him as our freshman of the year, if I'm remembering correctly, and he was supposed to be one of the most polished pitchers in the prep class. He really was, but you know, in this first big college showdown, he did not get it done for them. So it'll be interesting to see how they go back and kind of shape this pitching staff. And it's significant this week for LSU. I don't think anyone needs to push in Baton Rouge at all, but I do think a team that, you know, does have some work to do, and that's not surprising. I guess, ultimately, that, you know, all these teams still have improvements to do. LSU just got exposed significantly, you know, this weekend. Now, elsewhere, we had South Carolina beating Clemson, like I mentioned earlier. That was South Carolina took the first game and the last game of that series. Clemson grabs the middle game, but South Carolina really took it to Clemson on Sunday in Columbia, blowing out the Tigers. And as a result, South Carolina into the top 25. They had not really tested themselves to a significant degree before this weekend. They're kind of building to this annual rivalry series against Clemson, and they did a good job of building towards that. Really, they You know, it's a team that, like Texas, suffered a lot of losses from last year's Super Regional team turnover there. But they've done a good job of putting some things together, and they're 9-2 overall. They have series wins against Liberty, Utah Valley, and Liberty's a pretty solid team. And Clemson, we thought a lot of coming into the year, and I was impressed with the way South Carolina hit this weekend. I know that there are some questions on the mound right now, especially after Friday starter Cameron Wojcinski comes up injured on Friday night. So we'll see where South Carolina turns from there. But at least for this weekend, South Carolina really came through with a statement series win. It's the first time they've won the series in 5 years, which is significant in itself. You know, just a big weekend for Mark Kingston and the Gamecocks. Dave, you were down there in South Carolina. What were your what was your takeaway from the Gamecocks?
Well, they have a lot of nice pieces. I think the concern is, as you said, the Wojcinski's injury is going to hamper them a little bit. I know, talking to the coaching staff, they have 5-game week this week. They're going to have some shuffling around to do. Offensively, they have some really good pieces. I walked away really impressed from T.J. Hopkins. He's one of those young men that seems like he's been at South Carolina for about 20 years. It is his senior year now, but he's playing like a veteran. He had a great weekend. He was 7-for-15. He had a double, 3 home runs, and 9 RBIs. I'd consider that a pretty good weekend, especially when you're playing your arch rival in a big weekend series. Andrew Eicher had a good, he swings the lineup. He had a really good weekend run production, 7-for-12. One guy that really impressed me is a junior college transfer named Luke Berryhill, their catcher. He can really catch and throw. I watched him every inning in between. I saw when Clemson attempted some steals, he threw guys out. Really like him, and he's offensive, very offensive. Got some power, had a good weekend also with five RBIs. And then Noah Campbell at the top of the order gets on base and does some exciting things. So I like some pieces there. The one guy that I really walked away from the mound impressed with was a young man, a freshman named Brett Carey. Pitched 3 1/3 innings on Friday night, 2 hits, 7 Ks, a true freshman in that kind of environment, pitching in Clemson as a freshman, was cool, as calm and cool as any freshman I've ever seen. And then talking to Coach Kingston the next day, he was a young man that they were kind of teetering whether he was going to make the team or not. And it just goes to show that sometimes us coaches really don't know sometimes what's inside of kids. And I think he's a guy with the injury now to Wojcinski, he's a guy that may be able to step into that rotation because he showed me a lot of poise and a lot of charisma for a young man. But they've got some issues on the mound, but I like their offense. But issues fixed on the mound. Their Saturday starter, Dylan Harley, really impressive left-hander, but it's been his kind of why his numbers aren't very good. He's got to get that fixed because that Saturday starter is such a big starter in weekend series because it can save the bullpen. When you have to go to your bullpen early on, it's going to make it tough for you to be successful over the course of a 3-game series.
And I know you came away impressed with Clemson despite them losing the series. What is it that has you encouraged about the Tigers going forward?
Well, they've got good pieces, too. And you know, obviously, their guy, Logan Davidson, the shortstop, the guy who's everyone's looking at from the major league perspective in the draft, he's gotten off to a little slow start, had a good weekend. Not a great weekend, but a good weekend. Sam Hall at the top of the order, I think a good baseball player, gets on base. Michael Green had a good weekend. Guy walked away liking a lot is Grayson Bird. He's kind of got the Justin Turner-like beard, red-haired beard, grinder at the plate, takes good at-bats, has good pop. But again, if they're starting pitching where the concern is for me, their bullpen had some good pieces at the end. Matt Clark, a left-handed pitcher, came in Friday night, could really pitch and really slowed down the bats of South Carolina. Holt Jones came in on Saturday, was throwing 95-97 on the gun readings off the stadium. I don't think it was quite that high off the regular dummy, but he is still in the range of 93-96, came in with an explosive fastball, and then Travis Marr at the end of the game. They had some good pieces in the bullpen, but when your Saturday guy, Davis Sharp, who I think is a good college two-way guy as a true freshman, hitting in the lineup the middle of the order starting on Saturday, he goes 3 2/3 innings, which was the longest stint of any of their starters over the weekend. And it's tough to win series, it's tough to win baseball games, when you're starting rotation, that's the deepest one of your starters goes. But I think they've got good pieces. I like Brooks Crawford the Friday night, but I like what he brings to the table. And then, obviously, Sunday started, Justin Wroblewski had a tough start. But I do like their pieces. They're young in some places, but I like their athletic ability as a lineup. And I think eventually they're going to be a good baseball team. And I think this wasn't a good team that has played better than them in a three-game series.
Clemson has to really figure things out right away. They've got North Carolina coming in to start ACC play on the weekend. So that's going to be an interesting to see how Clemson handles, you know, this setback. Are they able to bounce back right away and prevent this from spiraling at all? Because things don't get any easier this weekend, and then they're right into the thick of conference play. So you gotta get it rolling again, which we'll see if Clemson can do that this weekend. I mentioned earlier that this weekend also had some great tournaments. One of them down in Frisco, the Frisco College Classic, produced a top 10 matchup on Saturday with Mississippi State facing off against Texas Tech. And Mississippi State got the better of the Red Raiders in that one behind JT Ginn. And Mississippi State goes 2-0 down there. Texas Tech goes 0-2. Sunday's games were washed out. And Sam Houston State and Nebraska both go 1-1 as the other two teams in that tournament. Joe, you were there, and I know you came away pretty impressed with both the Bulldogs and their freshman phenom, JT Ginn. But what was your impressions from Frisco?
Yeah, Mississippi State is just going to be a tough customer to deal with in SEC play with what they have on the mound. And the headliners there, obviously, the lefty Ethan Small and then JT Ginn, the freshman righty. And they were both really, really good again. Ethan Small, that changeup is just a really, really good weapon for him, and he uses it all the time to get hard hitters off. Like, he really has a ton of confidence in it. And he did a really good opener against Sam Houston State. And then JT Ginn was even more impressive, really, against Texas Tech when you consider the opponent there and the offensive expectations we have around Texas Tech. Now, Sunday did get washed out because the temperatures were in the low 30s, and then there was a pretty strong driving wind that made it feel really just absolutely brutal, and it was damp all weekend, so it was a really tough environment to play in. Of course, everybody has to play in it, so that's something we heard over and over again, is that there weren't a ton of excuses made for it, but it really was tough. But JT Ginn was absolutely outstanding. I came away impressed with the way he's just able to kind of use his fastball differently. It's not just arm strength, it's not just velo, although he did get up to 94. But it was, a cutter that he'd throw at 89, and then he'd come back with a sinker that he'd throw at 92, and he did a really nice job with Josh Young, struck him out twice. The first time was on one of those 92-mile-an-hour sinkers, and it was just a swing you don't see from Josh Young very much. It was off balance, it was reaching, it was a ball that ended up out of the zone, and I think that was just kind of a good microcosm of the day for JT Ginn. It's a really, disciplined Texas Tech offense. Cold or not, you expect a Texas Tech offense to be really disciplined, and they really struggle with that. And Tim Tadlock was honest about that after the game. He said, he was doing something, and he kind of put it on maybe the slider spin was a little bit different than what his team normally sees. But his point was, we've got a whole staff of guys who throw hard, but there was something different he was doing that was getting us out of our game. And, he hitters flailing. So I'm feeling pretty good about my JT Ginn Freshman of the Year pick at this point. Still a long way to go, and SEC play is going to bring trials and tribulations to any freshman, so I don't anticipate he will go through the entire season unscathed, but so far so good there. Bullpen's really, really talented. Cole Gordon showed probably the best breaking ball that I saw all weekend in his two appearances. Just absolutely outstanding breaking ball there. Jared Liebelt did a nice job this weekend. Coley White has been to 97 miles per hour this season. He was dominant in his time out there, and they've got some guys, names you probably recognize, guys like Spencer Price or Riley Self and Tristan Barlow. Just a really veteran staff in a lot of places. So, and the offense was good at times, too. Like I said, it was not a great offensive weekend, but, Jake Mangum did Jake Mangum things, and Elijah McNamee did some things, and, Rowdy Jordan, Dustin Skelton, they all kind of had their moments throughout the weekend, so it was a good offensive performance for Mississippi State, but that pitching staff in particular stood out to me quite a bit. Texas Tech, I'm not overly worried about it. One, because they were too close to game. Eric Slanning has been starting for them on Fridays, and I don't really know that's something that they want to have continue necessarily. That's no disrespect to Eric Slanning, but with a lot of the high-end arms they have on the staff, I think they were hoping that maybe someone like a Caleb Killian would be a big-time Friday arm. But Lanning's done a really nice job, so maybe I'm just selling him short, and maybe he is the type of guy that can really do it up for them on Fridays, and he was good again this weekend. So, you know, I feel a little bit more positively about that than I did coming into the weekend. Some guys were down velocity-wise. John McMillan came in on Saturday, and he was more, 90-91 with his fastball, which is below what he normally is. But again, you just don't know how much of that to put on conditions. So they just didn't string enough hits together. I think it was 7 hits in 2 games. But the positive spin of that is when they got guys on base, you could see what they were trying to do. I mean, they only got 3 hits against JT Ginn in the Saturday game. They scored 2 runs. And that was because every ball in the dirt, they're getting an extra base. They're trying to steal bases. They're moving runners. And that allowed them to be in that game on Saturday, even though they really had no business, you know, competing in that game just because they were really shut down offensively. So I took that as kind of a positive. So didn't get to see a lot of Max Marshak, which was a little bit disappointing to me. He's kind of a guy who I selected as the freshman of the year in the Big 12. He's just kind of struggled with the bat a little bit. He did start in the Saturday game. He came in as a pinch runner in the Friday game, and you could definitely see the speed. The speed pops off the page. That was exciting to see, but just wish I'd get a little more sample size from him. A couple quick things on Sam Houston in Nebraska. Sam Houston, what Matt Deggs called a toughness win against Nebraska in that Saturday game. I think it was 12-11 was the final, or perhaps 11-10. But just really, that was kind of the peak of the gross conditions. It was really coming down pretty good at that point in the game. There were quite a few errors. There was a gift from that game you might have seen where freshman Spencer Schwellenbach ran over Matt Deggs in the third base coaching box, trying to go after a throw that had gotten away. It was kind of an ugly game, but Sam Houston came back and won it. And Deggs' point is, you know, at the end of the year, the committee's not going to go, okay, who won that game? And by the way, what were the conditions like? They just want to know who won it. And they left a lot of his point was they left some games on the table last year, and that's kind of what cost them a spot in a regional. And I think this is a team determined to not have that happen again. So that was a big win for them there. Keep an eye on Colton Cowder. He's a guy I really like. He's the guy I selected as the freshman of the year in the Southland Conference. Really good raw athlete, runs well, supposedly has a 40-plus inch vertical. And Nebraska bounced back nicely after that tough Oregon State series. Chad Lindsman was really good for them in a relief outing. I think he's a guy that if Nebraska is going to challenge being regional again, they're going to need Chad Lindsman to be a big part of that. I really liked what I saw from him. And Colby Gomes was a nice surprise for me. Gomez came in relief in their win and was, you know, 92-94. He's a big, strong-looking guy. Was kind of to watch the mound because he's demonstrative. And he stomps around and he points and gestures and just kind of a guy who has kind of that infectious energy there. And Spencer Schwellenbach, freshman there that I mentioned earlier, had a nice weekend. He's really kind of been a catalyst offensively for them already. So, you know, last weekend was tough for them at Oregon State, and I was kind of curious to see what they had in the tank coming into this weekend. And they clearly came to play. I mean, they were just a couple plays from going 2-0 themselves had they gotten that win over Sam Houston. So came away feeling pretty positive about the Huskers as well. Disappointed not to get the Sunday games in there in Frisco, but given what the temperatures were, certainly can't blame them for not wanting to put some of those players at risk.
Yeah, it was a very impressive weekend there for Nebraska. I feel like even in going 1-1, just coming off of what they're coming off of, having seen Oregon State for 4 games, you know, that's really tough. And the you know, they didn't get an easy draw on Friday night, and you know, to come out and win that game, I thought was significant for Nebraska, and it'll be interesting to see how they go moving forward. They're supposed to get Baylor at home this weekend, and now because of poor weather expected in Lincoln, they have to go down to Waco for that series, and that's another really tough series. Nebraska with a really tough slate out of the gate, but if they can get through this, they'll be much better for it, and I still like them to make some noise in the Big Ten late season. Down the road from Frisco in Houston, we had the Shriners College Classic, which I have taken all in the granddaddy of all these early season non-conference tournaments. It is always a fun tournament down here in Houston. They brought in an all-Texas field this time for just the third time in tournament history, and But Texas A&M came out of it looking really good. They go 3-0. They were the only undefeated team in the tournament. And I thought what was most impressive about Texas A&M, of course, was the pitching. They only gave up a few runs all weekend. They got outstanding starts on Friday and Saturday from their left-handed duo of John Daxakis and Oz Lacy. Those guys combined to go for 15 innings, and they gave up only one run, struck out, something like 21 batters. And it was just a great look for both of them. Daxakis is going to be a top three rounds pick probably this year, and Lacy looks like a first rounder next year. And those two guys are going to give A&M a chance to win pretty much every weekend. And, you know, they look like one of the best 1-2 punches in the SEC. And I think that A&M has good pitching depth behind them. They're good in the bullpen. They've got a lot of arms to run at you, but those two guys especially can separate the Aggies. A&M is not hitting particularly well right now. Braden Shoemake has been kind of a little mixed out of it. He was slower out of the gate. He's starting to get into it now. He hit his first homer of the season on Friday night, and an opposite field shot into the Crawford boxes there at Minute Maid Park. A&M really needs him to get rolling. They need a couple other guys to get rolling. But I think, for the most part, this team's going to be a pitching and defense team, and they're really going to lean on that pitching staff. And I think the only downside to this weekend for A&M is that freshman stud Jonathan Childress, who is not related to head coach Rob Childress, walked off the mound with a trainer after three innings on Sunday. He has some forearm tightness, and we'll see what comes of that, but that was not what the Aggies wanted to see in Sunday's game, just though they did come back, go on to win the game to again finish an undefeated weekend. And TCU went 1-2 down here, and that was a little surprising. The way in which it happened was even more surprising. On Friday night, they got an amazing start from Nick Lodolo, who honestly looked like the best pitcher in the draft class on Friday night. He was throwing his fastball with great tilt from the left side. He was pounding the zone. He did everything you would want him to do. It was his best, potentially his best start of the season. I was told that he might have been even a little bit better the weekend before against Grand Canyon. So if Lodolo is getting locked in like that, that is a great sign for TCU. They lost 1-0 to A&M on Saturday night. They just weren't able to capitalize on much of anything offensively. They had the leadoff runner on in nearly every inning against Lacy, but he was nearly unhittable. They only had one hit all night, and so they weren't really able to take advantage of the fact that he was a little wild. And then on Sunday, they got blown out by Rice, which was a big surprise, and put a really nice stamp on the weekend for Rice, which had been struggling offensively until Saturday and Sunday. They really found some things and got some things working, and they finished 2-1 down here, which is big for them because they had been coming off getting swept by Irvine last weekend. So a great weekend of baseball around from the whole field, really, but Texas State, mentioning Rice going 2-1, Texas State also went 2-1, and I think a lot of people, when this field got announced a year ago, saw Texas State in there, and that raised some eyebrows. They, when you're in a field with, teams like Baylor, A&M, TCU, Houston, and Rice, those are some heavy hitters, and Texas State has had some lean years in recent years, but they're rolling right now, and Joe, what do we make of the Bobcats?
Yeah, certainly an impressive weekend for them. And when I look at the Sun Belt at large, I think there's an opportunity for them to finish up near the top of the league and maybe challenge to get back into a regional. I mean, obviously Coastal is a leader in the clubhouse. They're changing. They've played really well this season. But, South Alabama has struggled a little bit early. Louisiana looked pretty good against Texas, but has since struggled. They got swept by Sam Houston 2 weekends ago. So maybe this is a Texas State team that's able to challenge back at the top of the league. They've really kind of struggled to get their footing as a Sun Belt program after moving over from the Southland, but perhaps that's changing. So certainly a good sign of that this weekend. Almost went 3-0, and they lost that Sunday game against Baylor when Baylor came back in the final inning. But I think that was more just a Baylor veteran Baylor team that just decided they weren't going to lose that game, and there was some fluky stuff, kind of a bloop double down the line that just kind of fell in. So if it had been 6 inches further to the left, it's a foul ball. So that's just kind of tough luck for Texas State there, but a good weekend nonetheless. And Nicholas Fraze nearly no-hit Rice on Friday. Fantastic start for him. And, before that, he had been just kind of okay. I mean, even as well as he pitched, his ERA is down to 3.79, which shows you that he had been just okay before. So certainly good step forward there. I also liked what I saw from Connor Wright yesterday because the games were canceled. I got a chance to stream a lot of games yesterday, and one of them I watched was that Texas State-Baylor game, and he gave up a home run right out of the gate to Richard Cunningham, who's off to a great start this season. but then really settled down and really did a nice job getting Texas State late into that game. And they've got some dynamic offensive pieces as well. Jackson Williams has been a catalyst so far. He's hitting .463, which, I don't know, that sounds pretty good. And then Jalen Hubbard, another guy, and I came away kind of impressed with the way Jalen Hubbard defends at third base. I didn't get a chance to watch a ton of that weekend because obviously I was in Frisco, but it seems like every time I kind of checked in, there was a highlight of him making an outstanding play at third base. So kind of an interesting team. You know, Skylar Valentine, Dalton Sheffield are off to good starts as well, Cole Coffey as well. So this is a team I'm really kind of interested to watch moving forward, and I would like to see it. I mean, I mentioned this in the last week's podcast, but this is a team that I remember, you know, being the type of team who, when they were in the Southland, would challenge to get into regionals and be a two seed, perhaps, you know, in their best years. And so they moved to the Sun Belt, made it to where life was a little bit more difficult within the conference, and maybe this is the year they kind of find their footing. So it's going to be something to watch moving forward. They're going to have opportunities for some wins in the Sun Belt that would kind of pad their postseason resume, and I'll be interested to look up again in May and see where this team ends up, because I think what they showed us this weekend is that on the top end, they have the potential to be that kind of team. It's just going to be about, you know, can they hold that consistency throughout the entire season?
There's a very interesting weekend series coming up in San Marcos with UConn coming to town this weekend. So I'll be interested to see how Texas State, if they're able to capitalize on what they've done to the first part of the season, it went with a regional caliber team, you know, in their home ballpark this weekend. So that's a under the radar series to watch for this coming weekend. One of the great things about the Shriners Hospitals for Children College Classic is the way that the Shriners Foundation gets involved, the way that, you know, they bring so many of the children who are helped by the hospitals to the tournament. Each team, you know, kind of adopt a kid that, you know, comes and watches them, you know, practice in the fall, and then is with them throughout this weekend. And it's always just really great to see you know, the players and how they interact with those children. And so I did want to mention that we at Baseball America teamed up with Shriners Hospitals for Children this week for a special offer. For any new one-year subscription that you make to Baseball America using the code SHRINERS19, Baseball America will donate 20% of the proceeds to Shriners Hospitals. So again, go to baseballamerica.com and use that code SHRINERS19. If you're on the fence about subscribing, this is probably about the best time you could possibly do it with what we have at baseballamerica.com, you know, going into the season, and then with the added benefit of helping out Shriners Hospitals for Children, which is an outstanding organization that does a lot of really big work. Now, guys, on the rundown, this does not exist, so I'm sprinting this on you guys, but Joe and I spent this weekend in Houston, where there is, you know, a lot of good food, and Joe mentioned over on Twitter at one point that he thought that maybe he would just eat all of his meals at Whataburger, which is, of course, a regional chain down here. And I suggested going to Torchy's Tacos, which is also a regional chain down here. So which do you prefer, burgers or tacos?
Dave, I'll let you hit lead off.
Well, I would, you know, I love my burgers. I'm not going to lie to you about that. But I prefer nowadays to be more tacos. They seem not to be as fatty as burgers are. So I would say tacos more for a health reason. As long as there's not all the cheese and guacamole and all that on it, it's a little bit of a healthier choice.
Dave, can I tell you that this weekend I ate a chicken and waffles taco, so tacos can certainly not be the healthy choice as well.
Well, I've never had one with waffles on it, and I probably never will have one with waffles on it. So kudos to you, Dave.
So I will go burgers. Just because I think the ceiling on burgers is higher. You know, don't get me wrong, I've had a lot of good tacos, and Torchy's is one of my favorite taco places. I miss that about living in Houston, but I just feel like the ceiling, there's a lot of good burgers that I've had that I remember specifically, but tacos, not quite so much. And maybe that's just been an opportunity thing where I've probably had more burgers in my life than I've had tacos. So I'll go burgers, but what I do like about tacos, and burgers are getting better about this, you see a lot of burger places that are doing a good job of kind of mixing it up, but there's just so much versatility with tacos. You know, something like a chicken and waffles taco was probably ridiculous 10, 12 years ago, but now The whole taco game is kind of blown up, and it feels like there's just, you can get just about anything wrapped up in a tortilla and call it a taco. So I'm here for that for sure. But I'll go burgers just because I feel like the ceiling on burgers is a little higher for me.
I am definitely going to go tacos. Burgers are solid. You know what you're getting. But I do like the variety. That's a great call there by Joe. As I mentioned, I ate a chicken and waffles taco already this weekend. So I just like the versatility and the diversity of flavors that you can get in a taco. And yeah, that is what I do when I come down here to Texas. I immediately eat as many tacos as I possibly can. So back to the on-field action, it is time for our weekly shout-outs where we mention some players or programs or stories that we haven't talked about so far but are worthy of the college baseball world's attention. So Dave, let's start with you. Who caught your eye over the last week?
Well, a couple things. First off, I remember in last week's podcast we were talking about Southern Miss and their tough weekend series against Mississippi State, and we felt like even though they lost the series that they were going to get better from it. We talked about the travel of going all the way from Washington to Hattiesburg. Props to Gonzaga. They won. It only ended up being a two-game series. They sweep the two games. The third game was canceled due to weather, but they go all the way a country, sweep Southern Miss in Hattiesburg, which is not easy to do, especially when you're traveling so far. Especially when they started the season kind of scuffling a little bit. I'm talking about the Zags right now, and knocked Southern Miss out of our top 25. So kudos to them. Now the reward for that is they get to go to College Station this week and take on Rob Childress, a very good pitching staff. So, again, props to Gonzaga for a tough schedule and all their travel, but to go in there and win two games. I want to congratulate Coach Fox at North Carolina on win number 900 at the school. And also want to congratulate Richie Price at the University of Kansas. We go way back from the West Coast. Richie's one of the nicest guys out there in the country. He got win number 500. So congratulations to both those coaches. And then the player I want to point out is Cal State Fullerton's Hank Laforte. He's their leadoff hitter, and he's doing what leadoff hitters are supposed to do. This weekend, he extended streak to 54 straight games of getting on base for the Titans. That carries back to last year. So congratulations to Hank Laforte and his 54-game streak of reaching base.
That is truly remarkable. 54 games, that's almost an entire season already. Quite the accomplishment there for the Titan. Joe, what do you got?
So my first one, I was going to mention Whataburger, but you kind of already covered that for me. Enjoyed my Whataburger, and I can already hear the In-N-Out people like rushing their computers to at me. Don't do that. Here's the thing, like, my hot take on regional fast food, it's all good. Like, it's all good. That's fine. Like, we don't have to get into this whole, like, regional fast food fight here, but happy to have Whataburger back in my life. So that was great. Also, a shout to the DFW area. The whole area I was in, Frisco, the Colony, Louisville, Plano. I grew up in a big city in Houston, so I guess I just kind of forgotten this because now I live in the Midwest in the St. Louis area where it's kind of historic building, older city. But I was kind of in these DFW suburbs, and I'd forgotten like how big the buildings are. And I don't mean downtown buildings. I'm saying like in the suburbs, like every place I passed were these humongous buildings. I passed something called a Nebraska Furniture Mart that I can only presume by the size of it has every piece of furniture in DFW in it. I mean, it was humongous. It took up like, you know, half a mile of highway. There was a gastropub outside the neighborhood I was staying that was three stories tall. Like these buildings were just restaurants and bars and retail spaces were just massive. And I just kind of reminded of how that is the case in some of these suburbs of these larger cities there in the South. That was kind of jarring. It took me a while to kind of get used to seeing that kind of stuff again. On the field, though, Pacific, 9-2 on the year. Series wins over Sacramento State and now most recently Seattle U. Good job there by head coach Ryan Garko. Player to know there, James Free II, their catcher, had a fantastic freshman year ago. Last year took a step back, maybe pressing a little bit, trying to live up to the expectations that came with his freshman year. So Pacific off to a nice start. And those are two important series wins against Sacramento State and Seattle U because those are teams that are kind of in a similar place in the West Coast pecking order as Pacific. So that's kind of big to kind of signal that maybe they are on the rise there. Not a team that's off the radar, but a stat that I found when I was going through some of the recaps this weekend. I put this in the top 25 rundown, but Logan Wyatt, So far this season, he has made 20 outs. He has walked 19 times, which is just incredible. His on-base percentage was like 6-6 something. So incredible start for him. Speaking of incredible starts, my last one, another team that Bernard, but a stat that just bears repeating is how good Tommy Henry has been for them this year. He has yet to give up an earned run. His K-to-walk ratio is 34-2. Opponents are hitting 132 against him. And Michigan pitching in general has just been outstanding. They've only used 9 guys this year. And granted, they haven't had the midweek games yet and all that kind of stuff. They really just play on the wins. But I think it shows that the core of their pitching staff is really, really good, specifically Paul Kaufman in that rotation.
That really has been impressive. He's been one of the best pitchers in the country to this point, and I, for one, am very much looking forward to seeing how he handles UCLA on Friday night in the opening of the Dodger Stadium Classic out there in L.A. That should be a fantastic matchup between him and Zach Pettway, and a really big test for him and the entire Wolverines team this weekend out in L.A. For my shout-outs, I want to start here with Duke pitchers Graham Stinson, Matt Dockman, and Jack Carey, who combined to throw a no-hitter on Friday night against Penn State. Stinson covered the first 5, Dockman threw the 6th, and then Carey the final 3 innings, and it was Duke's first no-hitter since 1955. Rather an impressive combination for Duke there on Friday night. Also wanted to mention Bryant, which back really well after getting swept at LSU last weekend. The Bulldogs went to Virginia Tech, which entered the weekend at 7-0, and Bryant won the series. It was their first ever series win against an ACC team, and that's a pretty solid Hokies team that they were undefeated going into it, and it wasn't a soft 7-0 really either. They had beaten some pretty good teams, and you know, Bryant is the favorite in the Northeast Conference again this year, and this is a team that is worth watching up in that part of the country with Jimmy Titus and Ryan Ward in that lineup. I know they're very excited to have that duo together for an extended period of time, hopefully, because each one of them has missed one of the last 2 seasons. And if they can have them healthy together with the pitching staff that Bryant can put together, I think that team can make some noise. And also I wanted to mention this wild, wild game that New Mexico and San Jose State played yesterday. They combined for 40 runs. Mountain West baseball is truly wild. That is my takeaway from that. But it is it's a fun time out there as well. I know I'm pretty sure I talked to Cass last week about the Mountain West. I know I wrote about it in Off the Bat. They started conference play this week, and things got crazy, right now, even ignoring the fact that New Mexico and San Jose State played this game, that San Jose State won 22-18. Air Force upset San Diego State on opening day of conference play, and I think Air Force is also worthy of a shout-out. They beat East Carolina on Monday. They've really been on a little stretch here. They won that series against Navy last weekend. They beat East Carolina. They beat San Diego State. That series, unfortunately, wound up only being one game because of weather in the Colorado area. But Air Force has been off to a nice start. So that's always fun to see when the Falcons can get rolling like that. So that, I think, about does it for week 3 of the third weekend of the baseball season. It was a fun one. It was entertaining. It was pretty much everything you would want. And we're looking forward to having more of those throughout the year. Hopefully this next weekend can live up to what week 3 was. And week 4 has some intriguing things looking ahead already. You have Texas going out to Stanford. You have the Dodger Stadium Classic, like I mentioned. So there should be some high-profile series, some key matchups for us to talk about here on the podcast next week. So to make sure that you guys can hear us do that, make sure you're subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcast app. And if you're so inclined, we would really appreciate you giving us a review or a rating. If you can do that, that helps other people find the podcast and lets us know what you like about what we're doing. Make sure you check out all of the college content over at baseballamerica.com. There's a new top 25 there today. There's my off the bat column. There's plenty of stuff coming out of the weekend, both from the Shriners Classic and the Frisco Classic, and there will be more throughout the week. So make sure to check all that out over at baseballamerica.com. And I will just mention this once again. We are running a special offer this week only in conjunction with Shriners Hospital, where if you subscribe to Baseball America, if you get a one-year subscription to Baseball America using the code Shriners19, Baseball America will donate 20% of that subscription cost to Shriners Hospital for Children, which, again, does amazing work throughout the country working with children who need their care, which they do, again, just a great job of providing them at their hospitals throughout the country. So that'll do it for us. We will be back here next week. In the meantime, again, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at Ted Cahill. Dave is at Dave Serrano 11. And Joe is at Joe_on_sports. We will be back here next Monday with a new Top 25 and a new edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. So we'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.